a reasonable number of people to have fucked your dad over. Right? My dad was fucked over by 42 people because we had to do 2 seasons of the show.
And I can only get rid of 1 per episode.
Yeah, that's totally what it is. It's like, God damn, Dad had a lot of enemies.
We got renewed for a 3rd season? Jesus, shit. Dad.
Roll. Generate.
Ooh. Generating.
14.
Numbers. 14.
1.
Fuck. Foe. Congrats.
Nice. Welcome to J-Man. The Escort Mission Podcast. Ooh. I'm Josh.
Hello, hey, Josh.
That's Mike.
Woo.
That's Charles.
Hello.
And we're here to talk about stuff. So
things. This is the stuff cast. Things
and stuff. Charles, how's your stuff and things this week?
My stuff is good, but my notes page isn't loaded. okay, yes, my stuff is good. What happened? I am reading.
Those are some nice socks, Charles. I just want to point out that Charles is wearing some yellow Argyle socks.
Some bright ass yellow.
Dude, Argyle. I got super obsessed with Argyle socks.
They're like yellow highlighter.
And I'm on this this page. It's like a daily deal site, except it's a bunch of deals every day, and it's specifically like it's just like cool designy products and fashion stuff. And they had a deal for these socks. This company called Argoz, ARGOZ, who make only Argyle socks. Like that is the business model.
I love the internet.
We're the Argyle socks guys. And
so what's a full retail price for some? So yellow ass Argyle socks.
They're $15 a pair, and okay. I was and this deal was $10 a pair, and I'm like, oh, that's so good, but I couldn't quite bring myself to do it, and so because I'm used to paying like you know $8 for 6 pairs of socks, right?
For like normal
for white
socks.
Boring for ass socks.
And then I was like, you know, those are really dope socks, but I can't quite bring myself to pay for it. I'll go find some cheap ass Argyle socks somewhere on the internet. No, you will not. I challenge you to do this. They do not exist. The least expensive pair I found was one pair that were purple at like JCPenney, but they don't have any other colors, right? And I wanted a whole panoply of Argyle socks.
Is it like Argyle purple with Argyle other
it's like purple
lighter
and black
purple
and
more purple?
Yeah.
Like
so,
purple and violet.
They were cool, but I wanted multiple colors. And that was the only one they had, and that was this one place. So most of them, like, that's the going rate. It's like $10 to $12 a pair for, like, a normal. And so then I found
Argyle will be blinging.
So I wrote Argyle's, and I'm like, oh, man, I totally missed out on your sale on Fab. Are you going to be doing another sale anytime soon? And the person said, oh, no, we're not. You know, maybe in a couple months, you know, keep looking. And I was like, okay. And then like, you know, 15 minutes later, they email me again and they say, we have a deal, a daily deal going on right now. It's like a Los Angeles based, there's a Los Angeles based daily deal site that has 50% off. So I'm like, fuck yes. And I went and I bought $100 worth of socks for $50.
Oh
and
shit.
And I got,
what?
I got all these socks.
So you got like 4 socks.
So I paid.
But they're slamming, Josh.
I paid $20 over that, so I ended up paying $70 for like 12 pairs of socks. So I got a super. I have a huge selection of awesome colors of Argyle socks.
Nice.
And what they do is they do contrapositives. So they have like this is like a navy white and yellow base, or it's like a navy triangle, white triangle, and then a yellow base. And they have like the contrapositive to this, which is like navy base, yellow triangle, white triangle.
Wow.
So you can wear the different socks.
What?
But they still match, and it's like people will look and not necessarily know what's going on.
One of each?
Yeah.
Are you going to do that?
Those are confounding.
I may well do so.
What those are. Uh-oh. Those are actually Charlie Brown. Those are almost Charlie Brown socks.
Yeah.
Kind of got the...
A little bit.
Yeah, can nice. We talk for 15 more minutes about socks?
Dude, the internet,
you guys
please.
Brought it up. I was not going to mention
the internet. Ladies and gentlemen, / internet, right there.
I wanted to plug, Hey Ash, Whatcha Playin'? Have you guys heard of that?
I have.
Hop.
So you both know of this?
I have seen several episodes.
I was
Hope.
Apparently late to this party, but that's funny.
Hop.
Yeah, it's out there.
And also, I love that Anthony Birch married his sister, except not his sister, because his wife is named Ashley, and his sister's name is Ashley. Mm-hmm. So there was some slight weirdness there when he was talking about getting married to Ashley without saying, my girlfriend, not my wife. And they're in, you know, all the videos together. But now that he's married, both his wife and his sister are in the videos, and they look nothing alike, and there's no confusion.
The one that I saw that was particularly funny was Red Faction Gorilla, which I will link to in the show notes. Oh, it's really good.
Did some shit get broken?
It's funny. It's just really funny.
It better.
You should check it out. So that's good. There are three really good car documentaries that are out right now.
Three car documentaries out right now?
they're like shorter. They're shorter. So there's, first of all, quickly, there's a full-length one called Truth in 24. They just did a second Truth in 24 2. Both of these are free on iTunes. That's the only place I know that they're available. They're like free HD versions. They're full-on, like, hour-long documentaries about the Audi Le Mans effort. And
they went 1-2-3 this year?
They win a lot. They win a lot, right? They just decided, like, Le Mans is our shit. We're going to win every time. And then Peugeot came along. Hybrid. Yeah, so they started with a diesel, and that was what they did this first documentary about. And then this year they did the hybrid diesel. But they make these really great documentaries, so those are cool. There's an episode of a YouTube show called Driven, which is about the Koenigsegg factory and the process of building those. And that's really good. It's like a half hour long, but it's like super well produced. And it's just a cool example of what people are doing on YouTube today, which is like incredibly high production value, like a lot better than most of the car television that's on actual television.
Nice.
Other than like Top Gear. Top Gear is like the only thing that's better than the stuff that's on YouTube. So that's cool. And then the best one, the one that I personally like the best, is this. It's a series that's on Vimeo by this guy, Josh Klason, C-L-A-S-O-N, called Depth of Speed, which are short little, like little 5-minute pieces that he just sort of traveled all over the U.S. And did interviews with people who are into these like super niche, like really esoteric. Like there's this shop in Salt Lake City that restores all these JDM classics, like Celicas from the 60s, and they bring over Skylines from, you know, 71, all these like really early Japanese cars, or this guy who's super into Datsuns who lives in Northern California, or these people who restore VW buses, and just like these incredibly esoteric little parts of the car hobby. And that one is really, really well shot. Like very, very well designed, well shot, well edited, great little 5-minute pieces. So
nice.
Depth of Speed. Very cool. I am reading this book called Rasputin's Bastards, which I found on Boing Boing. And you might have seen that, Mike. I know that you read Boing Boing.
I do. But I don't remember anything about Rasputin screwing a lot of chicks and not paying alimony.
It is it's historical fiction, as if the CIA, KGB psychic spy programs were real. Or they were real. Those were real things, right? But if that stuff worked, right? If that like remote viewing and psychic Cold War stuff actually functioned, and what the Cold War would have been like had psychic, you know, espionage been possible. And it's set in the present day after the fall of the Soviet Union. It's good. It's good, like, genre fiction, kind of action horror fun. Very good read, fast read. Yeah, fun to kind of chug through.
Words.
Books.
Sony bought Gaikai.
Yeah.
Cloud gaming
so, platform. Nice. Yeah, Gaikai. I heard about this, and I wasn't sure whether this was a good thing or a bad thing. You seem to think, Charles, that there could be a lock-in effect.
I don't
and Josh
see how
is like, it's
thing.
No big deal.
It's awesome.
I think it's good in the long term and in the general sense. I think it's bad in the specific sense, which is that as of right now, Gaikai is the company that has like an exclusive agreement or something to get that that cloud optimized GPU that NVIDIA is making, which we talked about on a previous show. And so for a while, they are the only ones who are going to have that available. And that's the kind of technology that, as I understand it, makes the whole thing work. Because right now the latency is just a little too much.
Well, we'll see. I mean, maybe an NVIDIA will license it out. Maybe ATI will come out with a competing technology. I mean, they, as soon as it becomes, it's not really necessary yet. Nobody's rolled out a huge infrastructure for you know, big time game streaming. And as soon as they do it, as soon as Sony and Gaikai does it and proves that it's successful, then everyone else is going to be playing a little catch up, at which point there'll be, you know, major pressure for ATI to come up with a competing GPU also, yeah, so that NVIDIA doesn't have a lock on that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, everybody's going to want to do it. Microsoft and Nintendo maybe, or maybe that. Google or maybe Apple. Or,
that's so smart. Every Sony TV is a PlayStation, right? Like, they just sell you a Sony TV and a PlayStation controller and you have a PlayStation. It's awesome. Very, so
the,
very smart.
The Vizio just announced a Google TV. This went a little under the radar. It was before Google I.O. They announced it like a couple days before. Mm-hmm. And they did it like the day or two after Sony announced a new Google TV that was $200 or $300 and seemed pretty cool. And then Vizio announced one that's like $99. Mm-hmm. New version of Google TV that looks totally rad, does all kinds of stuff, and also happens to do on live streaming.
No kidding.
All you need, wow, is to get the on live controller, which, mm-hmm, doesn't come in the package for $99, but the controller's $50 more or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then that unit, just your controller talks to it. I think maybe it's got a USB port in the back for the controller adapter. And then you do all your OnLive streaming through that Vizio $99 Google TV box.
I forgot, does OnLive have, it has a subscription model, right?
The way that I think OnLive works right now is you just buy a game from them and it, yeah, lives in your OnLive library, like a Steam library.
Oh, okay.
Except you never have to download it.
You pay retail for the game.
Yeah, you just pay for retail or whatever it is, because they don't go on sale as much as Steam. And then it lives there and you just play it in the cloud whenever you want to play it instead of downloading it like on Steam.
Right.
So if the latency is low enough and your bandwidth's good enough, and you have, you know, the PC client of OnLive running, or you have a little Google TV thing that runs the OnLive client and a little controller, then it should be totally badass.
Yeah.
I've tested it like at work and I was super impressed with how well Just Cause 2 played on my work laptop that has an Intel integrated GPU or whatever. I was like, this is awesome. Then I did it at home, you know, on a better GPU and a bigger TV and a way slower latency internet connection. I was like, oh, this is complete shit and not usable at all. Right. But that's because my Cox internet service was terrible where I was.
This is the first
last
thing.
Last week.
Gaming
and is now like, my Cox is great, so I need to try it again.
That's sorry, Josh moved. Gaming is the thing that makes people, that makes consumers aware of the difference between bandwidth and latency and how important latency actually is. Mm-hmm. Coming from a professional arena where I have represented products that involve that are like network accelerators that are specifically designed for use over like point to point links and, you know, small internet links for overseas remote offices and stuff designed to optimize for latency. Like, that shit matters, and it really impacts certain applications, and this is one of them. So, yeah, that's cool. I want that. Totally. I want all that to work.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully, at the very least, this is just more legitimacy for them.
Well, it definitely. You know? I mean, it should be a wake up call because Sony's not in the greatest of financial positions at the moment, and they were willing to spend, you know, close to $400 billion on this. So they clearly think that this is a highly strategic acquisition.
400 million?
Million, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. 400 million. Sorry. Atomic browser for iOS. Just want to throw a quick shout out. It lets you spoof a user agent string. So you can actually, there are a couple websites, Twitter among God. Them,
yes.
that do not have,
I know this pain,
the button at the bottom that lets you switch it out of mobile view.
Yeah.
So you can, This browser will let you represent it as desktop Safari or any other user agent string you might like to use and get the full site for those sites.
Yes.
So that's
this feature is absolutely necessary.
Completely
on
required.
Any browser.
Yeah.
Any mobile browser.
Yeah, it's because if you ever get anybody who starts following you and you want to say, okay, you can start following me, I ran into this like because at work, Twitter is blocked and I couldn't get to it on my phone. So I literally could not answer or approve a new follower or something like that. Just as a follow-up to that, there's also, I don't know what the engine is in it, but I actually heard about this thing called Kiss My Agent, mm-hmm. which does exactly the same thing. And I don't know what browser engine Atomic Browser uses, but...
I don't know.
I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter because you're not going to use it for like general browsing.
You only need it for this one purpose, but
that's another one that works, and I think it's free. I assume yours is free, too.
No, Atomic Browser is 99 cents.
Okay. Well, maybe mine is free, and you should also think about that one.
Then you should get that one.
I don't know.
Is that one a whole browser?
Yeah, it's a browser.
Okay.
I just don't know what engine it uses or what rendering.
It's all WebKit.
Not that it really matters. Yeah. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
And actually, Chrome browser came out for iOS too. That's sweet.
How sweet is it?
Very sweet.
Does it do the desktop bookmark syncing and stuff?
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah. And it has tabs.
And it has good tabs.
Yeah.
Have you guys done that? That shit is so dope.
What?
Tabs? Yes, I have used tabs.
I have also used tabs.
I'm aware
tabs
of why tabs are all right.
No, the open tab syncing between all your currently running or recently run instances of Chrome. So you click like home computer. Oh, these are the 5 tabs I left open on my home computer last time I used it. Or, you know, work computer or laptop or whatever. You see all your tabs everywhere. You see all your bookmarks everywhere. They're all just in one place without syncing anything. But it doesn't matter if they're closed, I don't think.
I cannot stand leaving tabs open. So what I use it for is the bookmark syncing.
Does it show you recent tabs, though, if you closed it?
It probably has, like, a recent tabs. What I really like is that it syncs all my bookmarks. I'm down with that. I do not like having open tabs. That makes me feel jittery.
Oh, I have a handful of tabs open on every system.
And I've never never wanted to open tab I had in one computer open and on another one. I've never wanted that. And so that's kind of eh.
No, maybe, you never wanted it because you never really thought about it.
I know that it exists, but I still don't plan to use
that. Now that you know it's an option, maybe you will use it. I mean, I use it so often now. I fucking love it. It's like, oh, what was I browsing at work? Oh, yeah, I was looking up this one restaurant. Instead of like going to Yelp and searching for that restaurant again, you can click on like currently open tabs on my work laptop. There's the exact comment I was looking at or whatever.
This is the continuous client.
It's a continuous.
Yeah, it's a good feature. I've never thought to, because I've like, when I'm done with my computer or my phone, I have done what I went to do, and then I am now done. There's no like, oh, I didn't finish what I was doing. Well, the next computer I'm on, I hope it remembers what I was
never
doing.
I never finish browsing anything ever.
So maybe that's the real problem here.
It's not a problem. It's just a different way to use computers, kidding. But I do not.
Yeah, I can't even imagine thinking that. I don't understand that at all.
I don't want to have open tabs.
That's like watching a movie halfway through and stopping and then finishing it elsewhere.
See, that sounds cool.
But once
how does
again,
that not also sound cool?
Right, but that once again, that's like a totally different mentality.
And actually, or a game. I use that a lot.
I don't stop watching something.
Or a game, then, resuming a game.
I don't know. I just, resuming a book. If I'm not going to finish it, then I probably won't even start
resuming it. Resuming an article you were reading.
That's the thing. Like, I know it takes a half an hour to watch an episode. If I'm not going to finish it, I probably won't even start it. If I don't have a half an hour to watch it, I don't watch 15 minutes and then watch it on my phone later.
Do you ever read half a Gama Sutra article and then realize, oh shit, it's
no
time to leave?
I finish an article and then I'm done with it.
You'd never have like deadlines or time, you know, appointments.
Get called away or appointments. A phone call.
Most articles can be read in like
meetings.
A few minutes. I don't read 20-page articles very often. I don't know.
All right. Well, I get interrupted with zero notice all the time.
And that's good. I don't do that. That doesn't happen to me. Thank God.
Okay. Yeah, there are use cases. I tend not to leave open tabs. I pre-ordered a Nexus 7 tablet, and that's cool.
Boom.
And
excellent.
I'm really close. I have decided that my next phone is going to be an Android phone.
What?
Because
Android plus Android.
It's just, so.
Who's got two thumbs and is not surprised? I'm pointing at me.
The iOS 6 announcement happened, and I was like, oh, cool.
Well, they haven't announced the phone yet. Are you going to change your mind as soon as they announce the phone?
No, because the hardware is basically at par. I mean, it's going to be this with a bigger screen, and they're going to have better pixel density, right? And that's about the only difference. They're all phones are at this point acceptably thin and small and light and cool.
So right? iOS 6 is not that impressive?
That's the thing. I was like, oh, iOS 6 is, you know, pretty cool after watching WWDC. And then Google...
Jelly Bean.
What was the... What's the name of their event?
Google I.O.
Google I.O. Google I.O. happened and Jelly Bean showed up and I was like, they're so far ahead. They're really far ahead. Those OSs are not the same.
And well, they seem far ahead because most people aren't going to get that OS until
that,
a year from now.
I have not gotten
when
there
when iOS 7 is out.
I have not gotten there yet. Yes, that is a problem. And I want to talk about that. But in particular, the feature that looks most interesting is Google Now, which is a... it is basically, to me... what I have always wanted and what has always been the promise of a smartphone or this type of connected device since Star Trek, right? Like, this is what it has all been building towards as far as I'm concerned, which is, for people who don't know what it is, Google Now is a feature where that basically looks at kind of all the things that you store on the phone, which are, you know, the phone numbers, contacts, your schedule, the emails that come in and out, as well as the stuff that you do on the internet, such as browsing history, live data, like traffic information. It basically, the weather, right? It pulls in all these different data sources and it gives you advice, information about your day. So for example, you don't program it with anything, right? You don't go in and say, this is my home address. These are the movies I like, right? It's just whatever you search for. If you search for a particular sports team, it decides that you're a fan of that sports team. So for me, it'll find out that I like Formula One and it'll update me when Formula One news happens. And if I have a meeting that's happening at a regular time each day, it'll take note of that. And if I need to leave early because traffic conditions are bad on the particular day on the route that I normally take, none of which I tell it, it just figures that out based on your habits, right? It'll say, oh, your path to work is slow today. You need to leave an extra 10 minutes early. That's so awesome. That's like everything I've always wanted from a smartphone. So I don't know. I have this like weird hope that, you know, iOS 6, they haven't announced everything yet and there'll be a bunch of cool shit, but I kind of doubt it, and I kind of feel like it's got to be Android. Like,
it's
they're
one
just
of those,
doing more stuff.
It's
more
one
and
of those
better
things
stuff.
That it's. I'm not sure if it's possible without one of this like overarching information vacuuming ecosystems like the Google Plex or whatever. You know, right. Like Google wants to know everything about you and wants you to just freely give it to them, and then wants to use that to feed you better services.
Yeah.
Whereas somebody like Facebook or whatever wants to know everything about you. And, you know, a lot of people don't think about it, but fewer people trust them and their motives for what they want to do with that. They want to take all your information and sell you more product or, you know, give you better ads or whatever. Right. But Google seems like do no evil. Like they want to give you better services with that info.
Yeah. Well, and so they also want to sell you better targeted ads.
Yeah.
That's kind of their main revenue source.
That's how they make money. Yeah. But for some reason, like, I think more people trust them. And I think...
they don't feel so intrusive.
I trust them more. But you do have to put this absurd amount of trust. A lot of people are still paranoid and don't want to opt into all those things, find them creepy.
Yeah. It's weird because I feel like I've read more articles recently where people are like, yeah, I don't think they're sticking true to their motto of don't be evil. I think, actually, total opposite to that, I think more people are coming out of the woodwork saying, I don't know about Google. I don't know. It seemed like a good idea at the time, but now I'm kind of waking up from my, you know, my drunken awesomeness with a hangover, like, wait, I'm giving Google, like, every bit of information. Mm-hmm. But I will say that I think at least if I have to give my information to a company that I think is going to return on my investment,
right,
Google is better than Facebook and Twitter and pretty much every I mean, I use Google, like, I use tons of Google on my Apple phone, you know, they feel kind of inseparable. I couldn't live without my Google account right now.
I think those people are going to seem a little bit more like tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist wackos like 20 years from now or something, because the services that you're describing, Charles, and that like the features and the intelligence of the service, right? that you want
yeah.
is completely impossible without gathering all this right, information. Yeah,
it definitely is.
Yeah. Right? It's just impossible. So, I mean, there will be an option for people to live in vacuums and not take advantage of these services. But 20 years from now, or whatever, however many years from now, maybe it's 5 years from now, everyone's going to see those people, the opt-outers, as living in the dark ages.
Term coined, wait for it.
As, like, not using technology.
The way technology. We talk about, you know, like, crazy militiamen up in Plentywood, Montana with, you know, basements full of MREs and yeah. rifles and shit.
And maybe to some extent they're right, and yeah. maybe we'll all regret our decision after a
when
while.
When the zombie apocalypse comes. Yeah. Right. When the singularity occurs, we'll come knocking and we become on their one door, with the machines.
And they won't let us in, and they'll... yeah. yeah.
But yeah, the benefits seem to so far outweigh like the privacy concerns or whatever.
Yeah.
If you're not doing a bunch of things you're embarrassed about or that are illegal.
So the shitty thing about this is now I'm like, well, what Google phone do I get? What I want
all
is,
of a sudden you have to think about it.
What I want is Jelly Bean as fast as possible, and the way to get that is the Nexus One. But
the Google Nexus,
the Google.
Oh, the Nexus 7 is the fastest way.
No.
To get it on a phone.
To get it on a phone. I'm talking about the phone. Yeah.
Get a Galaxy
Nexus. So I am
Nexus.
Pre-ordering the Nexus 7. So that'll be cool. But unrelated, just on the smartphone. Yeah. To get a Galaxy Nexus, right?
Yeah. Which is a good
stock
phone.
Android,
you should get it.
Which is a good phone. Yes. But it's not the coolest, newest phone that's available. That is the AT&T One X or potentially the Samsung Galaxy 3.
So,
which have more memory, better processors, faster performance, generally.
Yeah, but
like,
do you care
newer,
about those
sexier
things?
Hardware. Yeah, I do care about those
How
things.
Much do you care about those things?
Apparently
I'm
enough
not
to think
in the
about
business
buying them.
Of buying...
My point is it doesn't affect your experience very much if you're not playing like the latest 700 meg games. Mm-hmm. Those, like the Halo Game Loft clones or whatever, those sort of things. If you're not playing those, your experience isn't going to be that much different. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the butter thing looks pretty smooth and optimized even on the Galaxy Nexus, as you saw in like the Verge
yeah.
video review
yeah, sure.
today or whatever. Therein lies the problem of like so many Android options coming out monthly or
yeah.
bi-monthly or whatever, right? Whereas the iPhone comes out once a year and you don't have to worry about not having the best device for like another 12 months or whatever in that ecosystem. But in the Google ecosystem, no matter what Android phone you get, there will very likely be a better Android phone out within 2 months.
Right.
Right. No matter when you get one. And when I, you know, I got the Galaxy Nexus and it was like 5 months or something before one that yeah. like way better seemed to come out that I was almost jealous of or whatever. Right. And that just seemed like an absurd lucky amount of time, right? Because Justin got that Bionic and like a week later the Razr came out uh-huh. and it was like the exact same specs, but half as thin and better battery life.
Right.
And then the Razr Max came out like a month later, which was just like the Razr, but a million times better battery life. Like that,
and also from Motorola. Right? It's like, fuck you
and
guys.
And that was
what
even from the
doing?
Same company. Just iterate, better, like yeah. 2 months apart or whatever.
It really
and
brought
he got,
home to
and
me.
And he got the Bionic in like September. And Ice Cream Sandwich came out in October, and he still doesn't have Ice Cream Sandwich yeah. now, like 9 or 10 months later.
So basically, they're treating their hardware like software, like they're putting out point, you know, minor versions
well,
of it all the time.
They, there is no they, right?
Okay, well,
it's open source.
The Android
yeah,
phone
the
ecosystem.
It
yeah.
brought home to me the reality of Android fragmentation as a real problem.
I'm not right? saying this is a problem, though. My point is that it's more like buying clothes or shoes or, I don't know, cars or anything else where there are so many competitors.
Or PCs.
There's just more options coming out all the time. And the only problem is a psychological problem. More options
yes.
is always better.
I would not say that is a problem, however. Like, here's what I do when I buy something. I have a budget and I buy the best thing I can for that money. Right. And the best thing I can is a phone that won't get the best software. Like there's no good option is what I'm saying, right?
No, I'm saying there are many good options and the only problem
there
is
are many
a psychological
option,
problem that,
but there's
that
no
you might
best
have.
Option.
So if your goal is just to have the best device for as long as possible, then
don't
you know,
buy an Android
stay,
phone.
Stay in the Apple ecosystem and pretend like Android doesn't exist so that every time you get like 12 months out of that cycle of you know, mental satisfaction.
That's
right?
Wrong. You're thinking about it in the wrong way. That my issue now is one of trying to decide on a good option, the best, you know, most satisfactory option of those that are available now within the Android ecosystem. Forget about Apple. Like, forget about any of that stuff.
So in my opinion,
what's the best option?
The Nexus option is always going to be the best option. And so either get the Galaxy Nexus now or wait another 6, 8, 10, 12 months for them to announce the next Nexus. Now, which might be a Motorola device, might be an Asus, might be Samsung, right. Might be HTC, who knows.
What about the option of getting a 1X and rooting it and putting on like whatever crazy
That is
ROMs.
An option, how, but it's a bit that... of a rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And so if you want to just go down
the deepest, darkest rabbit hole, actually really know. All I know is like you can root these phones and put on custom ROMs and like they already have Jelly Bean running. They pulled it off the Nexus 7 and they have it running on 1X.
I'm not saying it's a problem and you shouldn't do that. What I'm saying is are you enough of a gadget geek that the ratio of time spent using a device for its intended functions is less than the amount of time devoted to making sure you have the best device and software features and mm-hmm. stuff, right? If you want to commit like hours per week to like trying new ROMs, updating things, looking for packages for like new Jelly Bean features that you can mod or hack and get on your phone and then troubleshooting issues with the different things and blah blah blah. Like, totally do that. That's fun. That's a whole, like, lifestyle, and it's a hobby, you know?
Lifestyle.
And it is. It's, like, it's a lifestyle. Cool hobby. Yeah.
Like
it's
those like, Boy Genius BGR readers.
Just an aside, because, Charles, because this is what I don't understand about the Android ecosystem, that you want to get this phone that is not necessarily the best hardware spec-wise.
No, I do want the phone that is.
He wants the hardware.
Sorry, but one of the phones you say will not get Jelly Bean for, like, a year. Now, when you say that, what does that mean? Like, because I thought the whole point of it is that all these phones are open source can do whatever the hell
carriers.
You want to them.
It's the carriers.
But why does that matter?
Because carriers are fuckers.
So they won't let you put Jelly Bean on that phone?
Yes. The difference is the discussion.
How do they do that, though?
The difference is the discussion we're having right now. If you go buy the HTC One X right now, mm-hmm. and you don't root and you don't download custom ROMs, then you're at the whim of HTC and your carrier, either AT&T or Sprint or Verizon or whoever
certifying that version of the OS.
Like them deciding to pull down the Jelly Bean source, have a bunch of their coders work on their HTC front end thing called...
Add their bullshit to
it. What's their
Sense.
Thing called? Sense UI. And all their, I don't know, the Verizon app or the AT&T...
Whatever preloaded bloatware.
AT&T Music Store, you know, and they need to write all their apps to be compatible with Jelly Bean, and then they need to test it, and then they need to release it to the beta group, and then they need to, like, push it out over the air. That might not happen for 3 months, 4 months, 9 months, 10 months, or it might never come to the phone at all, officially. Right? The example I just gave
because
was...
Because they're going to put out a new phone in 6 months that will obviate that phone, right?
But potentially, right. The example I gave was Justin's got the Motorola Bionic in September, mm-hmm. and it had gingerbread. And
which is version 2, right?
2.3.
Okay, that's before Ice Cream Sandwich and before Jelly Bean.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and then October, 1 month later, Ice Cream Sandwich was announced and the source was released.
Right.
And the official Motorola release of Ice Cream Sandwich on his phone still isn't out, and it's July.
He probably had Honeycomb, not gingerbread.
No, Honeycomb isn't on phones. It doesn't run on phones. Oh, okay. It jumps just straight from 2.3 to 4.0.
Gotcha.
What is that? 7, 9 months or something like that?
Yeah.
And it's probably coming this month because the official Motorola release leaked like a few weeks ago. Now he has the option of installing the leaked official Motorola port, which
really is the hacker phone,
is
man.
Generally a good option, but OS. Maybe it's a bad option if they decide to do one more release candidate version of it and then, you know, make you unable to update from the leaked release to the legit release, and then you have to find a hack to go from the... Yeah, I'm just saying, it's a...
Man, you are not selling me on this device at all.
Well, the Bionic, yes, that was not the luckiest hardware
just,
choice.
Just the ecosystem, like I'm fine with that on a desktop PC, but as soon as it
and what I'm
that is why yeah. Google brought out the Nexus line,
right?
It's because just, they're like, we need stock. This is what the stock Google experience is. This is the Google smartphone as we know it. It gets all the updates. It is Android.
I got it. So it's basically Android. Like the their iPhone,
yes, except their iPhone. The closest.
It may not be the best hardware. Is the problem right,
because they do like the yearly cycle or whatever with their hardware, and there's a bunch of better phones in the interim.
So what I'm saying is, I did the ROM habit for a little while on and off. I did it with Windows Phone 6.5 because I really love the Touch Pro 2 hardware, but HTC the specs sold me, and I bought that phone, and then I totally regretted it because of the software. Right, soon after I got a Droid X, and then I went crazy with the ROMs on the Droid X.
Mm-hmm.
And then went. This was kind of a waste of time. I eventually went back to the stock Droid X ROM. At that point in time, was stable and great, and I used it for the rest of the life of that phone. And so ever since then, I've said I'm going to go Nexus from here on out. I don't want the bloatware or the hassle of dealing with weird third party drivers, because I don't think Motorola, HTC, Samsung, like all these companies, I don't think they're as good at software as Apple or sorry as Google. Or Apple, for that matter.
Yeah.
And I just want as close to stock Apple OS as possible from now on. Did I say Apple again?
Yes.
Google.
We knew what you meant.
So, I want the iPhone of Android phones, which is the Nexus, which I'm telling him he should buy.
I got it.
And there won't be another one until maybe a year or whatever.
I follow you now. So, I'm with Josh now. Just get that phone. Stop thinking about it.
Yeah. It's a great phone.
It's going to be fine.
Do you know if they sell them in AT&T stores and I can go play with them both together? Because now that they have the reason I was so on the One X is like it has, you know, it's just much faster, and Android could be pretty laggy and choppy on, it's transit. And then they have this whole Project Butter where they're trying to make the operating system like, I think Matias Duarte, who's like the main UI guy at Apple, who they poached from Palm.
That is a good designer name.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That guy wears black turtlenecks architect frames and drives a Saab for sure.
Yes.
Yes. I still get a little...
He said, we declared war on lag, so they did a shitload to try and get rid of
brave.
That.
So brave.
Yes.
So maybe advanced hardware does not matter so much.
I still get a little bit of periodic like UI lag, just doing random things, typing. It'll get 5 characters behind what I was typing, and then all of a sudden do all those characters.
Mm-hmm.
I seem to have that problem more than other people I know with the same phone or similar phones. Maybe it's because I turn on that haptic feedback on the typing, so I feel the buzz all at once instead of with each, because I want that as close to possible feedback to know, you know?
Yeah.
And iOS is no stranger to that.
I don't think iOS is...
Lag. That happens all the time.
Like immune to that either.
It's not immune to it, but it's better.
And Butter is going to improve it.
And Butter improves it vastly.
If you watch
from
that Verge video today, I think it's totally. It shows you a couple moments of lag, even on the faster version.
Yeah,
you could see, but it's pretty good.
It looks a lot better. Yeah,
I think you know maybe the One X is a tiny bit less of that.
Well,
maybe
what not. I was thinking is maybe without that, the One X I think would be a whole lot better. But with that, it's not going to matter as much. So anyway, things I have to think about now.
Have fun with that.
Yep. Oh, Amazon, go to our webpage, click through our Amazon link,
get us stuff.
Check out the tall ladies.
Yeah.
From Mike.
Josh.
How was your week?
Okay, my week. Well.
Did you listen to music?
I did. I've got a few music picks, but.
Give us a music pick.
Well, first of all, though, I have the MISC. Miscellaneous part. So
I'm in charge. Give me a music pick.
All right.
Snap. Hosted.
What should I listen to on my new subwoofer?
Recommend that shit you linked me today.
So my friend Joseph Toscano, online though he often goes as JT, has an alter ego musical identity called Ver Heroicus. I don't know where that comes from, but he just put out a new EP. It's 5 songs. The last one he put out was about 4 years ago.
Where do I get it?
Very good. Bandcamp, veerheroicus.com.
Sweet.
I let Charles listen to it. He liked it. He likened it to sort of an Owl City / Postal Service vibe, which I could see. It's kind of happy, but also kind of, you know, it's like happy electronica, kind of bouncy melodic stuff. Yes. It's very good, though. He's actually
really good.
He's really talented and does other kinds of music besides that, and has been doing music for a long time. He's done some music for some indie games as well. So he's not just a hobbyist, but he's also an amazing programmer. He actually is a part of a startup that just got bought out, so he's spending most of his time programming and doesn't do a lot of music anymore, but you should check that out. Another album that I listen to has the second longest album title that I have heard. It's from Fiona Apple.
Uh-oh. Yep, I know this title.
But for those who don't know, the idler wheel is wiser than the driver of the screw, and whipping cords will serve you more than ropes will ever do. Second longest title.
Man, I listened to NPR when they talked to her about that, and they had to say that title like 8 times in a 5-minute period.
Although normal people will just say the idler wheel.
Can we? Yeah, don't say the whole thing again. No.
So I listened to this on Spotify. Which is awesome, by the way, and you should get it because you can listen to pretty much anything for free, plus some ads. She hasn't put out an album in like 7 years. She's basically done nothing except kind of, I don't really know what she's been doing, but...
she's awesome.
Yeah, Fiona
Apple's... She's like, fuck you, I'll make music when I want to, for me.
She makes music when she has to,
if basically. If people listen to it, that's okay.
Yeah, she's awesome. You know, I'm sure, you know, people have heard of her before. She's not indie or anything, but... Been a long time. She's put out an album. It's really good. It's pretty much what you would expect. Every Single Night is the single right now, which has a incredibly fucked up video that I don't even know how to describe, but it does include an image of her with a squid on her head. And that's probably the tamest part of the video. Also, Hot Knife, which ends the album, is really good and interesting. But the whole thing, you know, it's Fiona Apple. It's not really that poppy. I would say it's less poppy than her other stuff, but it's still really good. I would check that out.
I don't really ever think that, I don't put her in a poppy place.
Well, but she's lumped in with that. Like
really?
I
think of her in kind of like a Lilith Fairy type. Fairy, haha.
Yeah, I mean she could be in sort of like the Lilith Regina Spector, like anti-folk,
right?
Like girl at a piano, you know, singing in a very distinct style. She could be, but I mean, but her stuff has gotten on MTV like top 10 and Billboard charts, so she's one of the more popular ones. But
I put her in the same category originally as the Ironic Girl,
like was Poe,
Alanis Morissette,
when they both had early albums out at the same time or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
now I believe she's a little more niche than Alanis, but
and it's
still poppy, but cool and interesting.
Yeah, it's very, I mean, you know, her voice is very unique and has a very interesting style that no one else really shares.
I think of like Bengals and Britney Spears when I think of pop, you know?
Well, I think that's just a narrow version of pop. I don't know. Anyway.
Insofar as the Beatles are pop music, then
maybe I wouldn't put her up with the Beatles, but.
Well, I just mean like a pop as a term can be broadly or narrowly defined, and yeah.
Josh, are you raising your hand or stretching?
Yeah, semantics.
Yeah. So those are some music picks. But I went to Wisconsin this weekend. I don't know how many of you have been to Wisconsin.
Did you eat cheese?
I did. I ate fried cheese curds, which are amazingly bad for you. And it's so just tasty.
A mozzarella that sounds awesome. Stick, is it not?
It's like a mozzarella stick, except I think it's different cheese.
Right.
They're curds.
They're curds. Yeah, curds. I don't know if you've ever had a cheese curd, which is not the same as like a little cheese. Bit of mozzarella that you would pull out of a mozzarella stick. It's
unpressed cheese.
It's way worse for you in terms of health wise, but it's so freaking good.
A curd better worse than cheese? No, that doesn't make sense.
I think it's you're better off eating regular cheese than cheese curds.
No, I don't think so.
Part of the fat.
Curds have like more liquid and they're a little rubberier. The way you make cheese is you take curds and you squish them. So it's if anything, it's as healthy as cheese, except...
Okay, well, then when you fry it, maybe not so much, but super tasty. So I went there...
more surface area for oil. Agreed. Okay.
So I went there for kind of a tragic reason. My grandmother actually passed away at about a month ago. So Rob and I went and visited my dad, who had a service, and I met a lot of family that I probably never met before, and that's always an interesting experience. I don't... I don't really see a lot of my family because no one related to me lives on the West Coast. Everybody is Midwest and further, I think. And
jerks.
Yeah, my dad's family, you know, that's probably where a lot of the extended family comes from. And so there's lots of cousins and second cousins and once and twice removed people that, and friends of the family, like my grandmother's hairdresser was there because she did her hair for like 40 plus years. And so,
whoa,
you know, and, or someone that she babysat, you know, she was there with her mom and I've never met those people or didn't know them. And
it's longer than you've been alive.
Right.
Even if you lived near
She's done a lot of hair, more hair than the years that I have existed on the earth. But so that was a weird thing because it's actually the first funeral for a family member of mine that I've been to. I've only been to two others and they were my wife's family and a friend's father, actually. So that was kind of weird. I don't know. Mixed feelings about the whole death thing. And especially someone that I haven't really been super close to lately. So, but we got to drive through a lot of Wisconsin, which has trees. Lots of trees. Lots of nice deciduous trees. And not these fake palm trees that
are actually cell phone towers.
Dot California. Right. They may not actually be trees. One of the hard parts about going to Wisconsin and hanging around family is my wife and I actually started dieting recently. We're trying to do...
Fried cheese curds does not sound like it was beneficial.
Basically, an
that was splurge day.
Actually, it was a splurge day that ended up being a splurge weekend.
Splurge visit vacation to weekend. Wisconsin.
Yeah, when your family takes you out to eat and you're trying to like not eat carbs... That just doesn't work at all. And you're traveling, and you just don't have a lot of control over what you're eating.
That's the state motto, right? Wisconsin, home of the carb.
Yeah. When you're not eating badgers or cheese, you're eating carbs.
Yeah, when you're somebody's guest.
Yeah.
There's like a hospitality thing. You know, it's not about dieting. It's about taking the hospitality and just, you know, and I'm not big on making a hassle. And we had just started, like, the weekend before, so we weren't like
it wasn't
super
like
heavily invested,
really, yeah,
but it was interesting. Even after just a week of basically cutting down majorly on carbs and then having a bunch of carbs, you realize how kind of gross you can feel after eating a bunch of carbs. It's really weird. Like, it's not really something that I thought. I was just so immune to it. I was so numb because I just eat carbs without thinking, and then I'm just eating, like, you know, vegetables for lunch, and then I go and have, you know, I don't know, even just a burger with the bun is like, huh, or a bunch of ice cream or something like that, you know?
Along those lines, I just recently went to True Food Kitchen, which is a new restaurant. I believe there's one in Arizona somewhere, I think, but it's a new restaurant in San Diego. It's in the Fashion Valley Mall, and that place is really good, and it's all that kind of stuff. It's like really low carbs, just super fresh, locally sourced ingredients. I guess like Andrew Weil, who's like some food guru type guy, is associated and had a hand in planning the menu or something. But basically I went there and it was their like dress rehearsal essentially for this restaurant. So they did a promotion with the aquarium, which is where my wife works. They did, you know, basically just like, got one of those, you know, restaurant week type deals where, you know, it's $50 for two people and you get, you know, an appetizer and two entrees and dessert. And, you know, we had seven people there, so we got to sample like a huge amount of the menu. It was awesome. And we just ate and ate and ate and ate, but it was all so good for you and not carby that you left and you felt like not fat and bloated and disgusting, where, you know, you kind of feel that way after you have a slice and a half of pizza versus this like huge, you know, 12 course meal, basically.
Yeah. That's in Mission Valley?
Fashion Valley.
Fashion Valley. True it's Food Kitchen.
True Food Kitchen, yeah.
You know what else is in Fashion Valley?
Huh.
Smash Burger.
Which is pretty damn tasty.
They have a chai shake.
So a tea shake?
Oh, yeah. Man, it's awesome.
Does it have actual tea leaves?
No, it's like that Oregon chai, that like flavoring. Mix. Flavoring stuff.
So I have actually made green tea milkshake with actual green tea, and that is good.
That shit's good.
And I just like brewed the green tea, poured out most of the water, and then dumped the actual tea leaves into the milkshake.
like diced them and dumped them in. That nice. Was awesome. It gave it like tea-ish texture. Nice. Mm. So yummy. We had a milkshake party at one point. So we had like three couples went to this one friend of ours' house, and everybody showed up and had to make a different type of milkshake.
So your milkshakes brought all of the people to the yard?
It was a different yard, not okay. my yard. No. Brought people to the kitchen, that was for damn sure.
One awesome food, one thing you realize when you try to diet and you try to cut out things, you have to get more creative about what you eat, and so you try to find interesting new recipes or idea ways to prepare food. So one thing we found that was really interesting that I never thought about doing before, instead of having mashed potatoes, we have mashed cauliflower, mm-hmm. which is not something I normally eat a lot or even think about eating, except like in a veggie tray. Yeah, you just you heat up some, you mash it up, and then you put it in a food processor, and you add, obviously, a little butter, a little garlic, maybe some salt and pepper, maybe a little cream, and, you know, it's as good as mashed potatoes with, you know, way less carbs, and I was really surprised. I didn't know, and didn't even know that was a thing, but...
Interesting. I'm skeptical. I'll try it, though.
Okay. We've had it multiple times, good. And other people good. Have had it. Justin had it, and he thought it was good, so there's another opinion besides our
I've own. Had it. It's good. It doesn't taste the that same. Guy. The texture is different. You can definitely tell the difference, but it tastes good. I mean, it just tastes like sort of fairly creamy, basically slightly less creamy, more texture-y mashed potatoes.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
And it depends on how much you mash them up, too. I mean, you can leave them a little chunkier if you want to. Okay, so TV. I've also watched a little TV. Louis C.K. season 3 started.
Mm-hmm. Oh, shit.
Saw the first episode.
Oh, shit. Don't spoil anything. Gotta watch it.
Okay, I'll spoil it by saying it's fucking awesome. There are jokes in it. Watch Louis C.K.
He's so great.
He has not lost anything. It's just as good as
Patton Oswalt tweeted about him today, which I saw retweeted through somebody, and he said, Louis C.K. is making the best American movies right now in 30-minute chunks on TV.
Yeah, totally agree. I can't believe he continues to, like, God, it's amazing.
He's touring. He sent me an email.
Personally? He said, Josh, you should come check me out.
Yeah, no. When you
it
when
had
you,
my name because at the you top put your of name the in the
profile. On when the you internet. Buy that $10 special or that $5 thing or whatever.
Yep. Live at the Beacon.
If you opt in, he sends you these emails every once in a while, and they're totally personally written by him. He's such a hands-on with that whole operation. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And, he's not coming anywhere near us. He's not even coming
to L.A.?
Not even L.A. He's doing a nationwide tour, and he's coming to, like, San Francisco or something.
You think he'd go to, like, Tijuana or something.
Yeah, fuck that.
Also, I caught the first episode of Aaron Sorkin's new show, Newsroom.
Yeah. Shut up. That started this week, too.
Where have you been?
Are we going to watch that week? Stop watching it. We're going to watch
that. What do you mean? I've already watched it. It's done.
We're going to watch that weekly instead of Game of Thrones now. That's the show.
Okay, so...
No, that's not the show.
What?
It's getting extraordinarily bad reviews.
Suck it. It's going to be a good show. Okay,
no. Honestly, okay. Like, it's getting... by people who love Aaron Sorkin shows, they're like,
what?
He's not doing a good job with the show. Yeah.
What's your opinion, Mike?
Okay, so I don't subscribe to the it was shit. But I will say that it's Aaron Sorkin, which comes with everything that Aaron Sorkin comes with, being like the fifth or sixth show that he's done now that is that show that Aaron Sorkin does. Like,
awesome. I want more Aaron Sorkin.
Right, but...
How could that
But be it's terrible. Weird. Like, as I was watching it, I was thinking, like, okay, right, the characters and their motivations, and he's going to do the speech now, and he's going to have that response to that guy. Like, it's
too formulaic.
It's so rote. It's Aaron Sorkin. Like, he's not trying anything new. It is just more Aaron Sorkin.
I listened to a podcast with three people who are self-described Aaron Sorkin apologists. Like, they're people who defend him to the last, and they all said, like, this is my least favorite Aaron Sorkin show.
Yes, but even saying that, it might be brilliant.
But those are people who who won't admit Aaron Sorkin has flaws.
But least favorite of amazing things, yeah. Right? Could still be better than a lot of other things,
I think Aaron Sorkin is sort of like pizza and sex. Even like bad pizza is still fucking pizza.
This is what I'm saying. Maybe it's like cold day-old pizza.
It's cold day-old pizza,
man. It's still fucking pizza, my friend.
Yeah. Hey, you're talking to a guy who loves Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, so...
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So, I will say...
So, you're saying we should just re-watch Studio 60 again instead of...
I don't know. Jeff Bridges...
Foxworthy?
is Jeff... No, it's not Jeff Bridges.
Bo Bridges?
It is Jeff Bridges. Yes, Jeff Bridges. He has. I mean, you've seen at least the trailer. You kind of.
Are you talking about the guy who plays the anchor?
Yeah. It's not Jeff Bridges.
No. It's Dumber.
Jeff Daniels. Yeah. So
you Dumber. That's his fucking name now. That's Dumber. How people remember him. It's so brutal.
So
who's the guy Dumber?
So you know, the trailer kind of shows the gist of the show, and that moment in the show, which comes right away, is great, but you just kind of like, yeah, you know, I get it. It's sort of like beating you over the head. If you've never seen Aaron Sorkin, right, you probably think it's great.
Stop talking this. I got to watch it.
Okay, yeah. And it's been on YouTube for like 2 weeks for free, so you have no excuse.
I'm behind on internet.
Right. I also started listening to a new podcast on the podcast app for iOS that just came out
that I think is
fine, but let's not have that discussion.
Yeah.
Anyway, it plays podcasts. That's all I care about.
Terrible podcasts.
Slate. Yes. Mostly. Slate has a new podcast out called Lexicon Valley.
Yeah, it's great.
Which is a podcast about language, as blunt as that's how they describe it. It's really good. I find it incredibly engrossing. If you like linguistics or just the English language and all its nuances.
And sucky podcasts.
It's great. Right. Yeah. Only listen to it if you have exhausted our podcast 20 times over. Also, hey, guess what? I played some games. Because of our discussion last week, I started playing Portal 2 again because I did feel bad.
It's a good game.
I felt that I didn't give it a fair chance since I played through it once, and I played Portal 1 like a gajillion times, and I'm maybe like a third of the way through, and it's as awesome as I remembered it being. It's good. But I also started playing some of the DLC.
What?
Because they put out an editor so you can make your own levels, and of course, the internet always fucking delivers on this kind of shit.
Are you playing internet levels?
I'm playing what is said by many people to be one of the best internet level collections. It's actually a collection of 12 levels called 12 Angry Tests.
Oh, shit.
Which there is some debate on actually how it was made because of how complex they are. A lot of people believe it was actually made with not the tool they just released, which is a little more basic. There's another one called Hammer, which I think is actually the one internally that Valve uses to make the Portal 2 levels, which gives you way more control over the scripted events that can happen. You know, the one they just released, which I forget what it's called, lets you basically make like a really awesome room, but not necessarily like a level with scripted events like Half-Life 2 or something. So they're really good. I've only gotten through, I think, three of them, and they're legit. This guy knows what he's doing. He could have written real levels for the game.
Yes, I was waiting for more of those user-created to exist before I go back and plow through a bunch of those. You should play Quantum Conundrum, though, because it's just new.
True. I don't know why. I'm just not as interested in that. It's
good.
Okay. Well, you can talk about that soon.
It's good.
Done. I also started playing Flow for iOS, which is a cute little puzzle game where you connect nodes of different color on a grid.
You connect dots.
Right. I call them nodes, whatever.
Don't cross the streams.
Dots, nodes. And you can't cross the streams if you want 100%.
You can't cross the streams if you want to finish the level.
True. But, sorry, to 100% it, you have to cover every grid space. Yes. You can defeat the level without covering every grid space. But that's a cool little puzzle game for free that's fun. An older puzzle game that I just got around to playing is called Moxie. It's a word game that basically you get three rows and five columns, and you run through 52 randomly chosen letters, and it's like Scrabble. Each one is worth a certain number of points. The more rare letters are worth more points. And the trade-off in the skill risk versus reward is that you can put a letter down on any square, and you, as long as you don't make a word, you can keep putting letters over top that letter. But as soon as you make a word, then those letters are locked in. And if you put another letter down over one of those letters and it's not a word, then it reverts back to like variable and you get a penalty. So the idea is that you want to make a bunch of words that are like one letter off from another word so that
flow,
you can keep...
Flow.
Yeah, exactly. So that you can keep a chain flow going. Also, there's a list of words that if you spell those words, you get like a major bonus. And so the idea is to try to kind of like strategize your letters and place them where you think you can make these high scoring words without screwing yourself, where you have to put a letter down that screws it up and, you know, reverts back to a non-word and you get a penalty. And so, you know, it's just kind of a fun little pickup game that is actually pretty damn addictive. and has been out for a while, and is made by the same guys who make Seven Little Words, which is another fun little word game. I like word games. The English language is interesting to me.
I don't like word games.
I don't really like word
Josh
games.
Josh doesn't
either.
Like word games. Apparently, Charles doesn't like word
Not
games.
Not that much.
I can't think of words. I have bad word recall.
I have a big vocabulary, and so it pisses me off when I'm not good. Like, particularly Scrabble is a game I feel like I should dominate at, and I'm actually really bad at just looking at a random assemblage of letters and finding the words in it like that, and text twist and bobble.
I'm not good at that.
I'm terrible at it.
I look at jumbled letters, and I don't see words.
And it pisses me off. Yeah.
Unless it's Boggle. If it's Boggle, I can think of a shit ton of three-letter, four-letter words and just kind of dominate via that strategy sometimes.
Right.
You know, the version of Scrabble that I like is Speed Scrabble. Have you ever played that?
No, but I can kind of imagine what that might be like.
It's not what you're thinking.
Oh.
It's not played on the board. You just play on an empty table, and everybody gets... Let's see. Does everybody get their own set of letters?
We play that. It's called Bananagrams.
You get your own set of
seven... Yeah, it sounds like Speed Anagram.
You get seven letters. Somebody makes one word on the board. At that point, everybody is playing at the same time, completely in real time.
That one's fucking chaos.
Just laying their words out. You keep your seven letters and you pull in new ones from the tiles that are there, from like the available tiles. And like, I forget what the win condition is. Maybe you do have your own
you
set
run
of tiles.
Out or something.
But there is a winner, so it's not just... Like,
well, I assume you get points for every word that you put down, and whoever has the most points.
No, because you're all playing at the same time. You literally are all going, and nobody stops until... There's no, like, stopping, oh, I got a point for that one. You're not adding up the letters. It's just, like, making words out of the tiles, and you do it really fast. Next time, I'll ask the guy who I played with and find out what the official rules are, but it was fun.
So it's really interesting, because it seems like both of you enjoy the twitch aspect of a puzzle game, and I enjoy the non-twitch aspect.
The thing I like about that is a small word is as powerful as a big word. Whereas in Scrabble for points, like, you have to be making the biggest word you possibly can out of the tiles that you have
Scrabble
available.
Is a math game, actually. It's not so much a word game. It's about memorizing this small subset of words that gets you the most number of points, which Lexicon Valley did an entire podcast about Scrabble and the art of it.
Have you ever heard of Away with Words?
I have, yes.
Okay, yeah. So that's a very similar
I should check that on. Yeah, I've just never checked that out.
Yeah, that's existed in this county, county on the radio for like 10 years.
Yeah.
A show that's basically exactly like Lexicon Valley.
Right. I knew of that one, and I'm not sure why I haven't checked it out yet.
It's pretty great. It's just super dorky.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Any discussion about language is kind of hard not to be super dorky.
No, honestly, God, Lexicon Valley is Away with Words. It is the same show.
And it's also super dorky. Yeah. But if you're really into the language, the language is fascinating because, and I know, Charles, language is really important to you in how it gets used and how other people use it and like the words you choose and what that says about you.
I have English teacher parents.
Yeah. And so that's these kinds of podcasts and these kind, you know, are just about culture. And language is just a tool we use to kind of like purport or to...
Yeah.
Describe culture. So
they did a good episode on epithets, Lexicon Valley.
Their second episode was actually about a specific epithet that I do not wish to repeat, but that was incredibly fascinating.
Yeah.
And my last one I just want to mention that I guess we're probably not going to get into because I'm the only one who has any experience with it. I checked out the Mass Effect 3 New Endings.
Yes.
On YouTube. I know, like a Philistine.
Yeah, you didn't play it.
Right, because I didn't need to.
So this should not be in the section of games you played this week.
But anyway, you guys need to check this shit out because we need to talk about it at a later point.
Yeah. On the list.
All right. Well,
what
that's
I found
me.
Out is that you got to play the whole like final ending section again.
It's not hard. Come on.
It's a long.
I did it three times before.
It's a long fucking.
It's not that hard.
No, it's not that
like
it's hard.
From the
it's
middle
just that...
of. No, it's the entire last Earth battle section.
That sounds fun. I want to do that again.
If I want to play a bunch of it, I kind of want to just play multiplayer.
Pump the difficulty down to narrative and
do
it.
Yeah, maybe I'll do that.
It'll still be fun.
Yeah.
And you'll fly through it.
That's true.
Right, but the point that I make that I will end this on is that the whole point of those new endings for me was the ending, was the content.
Yeah.
Playing that last part, which takes time and doesn't change, well, as far as I know... It's just gameplay that is what I'm doing until I get to the content.
Yeah, we don't need to have this argument, but
Right.
Well, I want to sit in front of my TV on my couch with a sound system, boot up the Xbox, put the game in, load the game, download the DLC.
Why don't you describe?
I want to fucking
press the A button.
The game.
I want to press forward.
And feel like and I'm playing the game when I see that and ending.
Pull the right trigger.
I don't want to like also pull the left watch trigger. The YouTube. It just feels different. Maybe it's,
you're right. It does feel different.
Maybe it's a feeling, but
I but think it's not invalid. It's totally is valid important way to do it.
For, you know, emotional experiencing of the story.
You know what? I got more emotional from these new endings than I did from the original ending, and this was without playing the game right before that ending.
All right, well, that's so a positive review.
You're
going to
be a
review.
Pile of fucking tears when you...
Yeah, you're, positive review. You won't be able to speak when you come back. All right, I'm done.
Cool.
I didn't write down a shit ton of stuff. Let's see. I watched some bad TV. I watched Revenge, the first couple of episodes of that.
And was that gotten on someone? Was that planned and executed?
It was. It was. Revenge has gotten. It's a.
It's when someone wrongs you and you get them back for it.
It's an ABC series, new this year. One season's about over. Starring some really cute girl.
I.e. the reason Josh watched it.
And we're the male gays. Who lives apropos of our
lives
coming
in,
discussion.
In the Hamptons. And
oh, it's her fucking father, Sarah Michelle Gellar or something.
No, it is.
No, that's a different
that's
one.
Exactly. It's I was totally that? Confused, and I thought it was the Sarah Michelle Gellar show, but it isn't.
And yet, when
I
you found out
like
it wasn't her, you didn't stop
a
watching.
Times.
Yeah, it's not that one, though. Okay. It's the other one that I confused with that one.
All right.
It's this other actress, I don't know her name. Her father got framed by a bunch of
Sarah
people
Michelle
when she was
Gellar.
A kid. And so her father got framed.
Oh my God, her initials are SMG, just like the gun.
And so she like changed her identity, like got all kinds of training of some kind. She's fucking brilliant and kind of like a spy. And she basically gets back at everyone that had anything to do with framing her father, right? And it's in the fucking Hamptons, so it's all just richy rich, like envy, you know, whatever.
How's
like
that whole
royal
series?
Pains.
She can do that in an episode.
Every episode. you will realize very quickly if you watch it, which you won't.
Won't, no.
is super formulaic in terms of like, here's a person that she needs to get revenge on. Here's the whole process
it's
getting
revenge of the week.
On this person. Yeah. And just fucking American TV. It took me two episodes to go, fuck, this feels like a 22 episode season. Uh-huh. Like, this would have been a good show if it were like six episodes. But immediately it
like
feels
like a reasonable number of people to have fucked your dad over. Right? My dad was fucked over by 42 people because we had to do two seasons of the show.
And I can only get rid of one per episode.
Yeah, it's totally what it is. It's like,
God damn, Dad had a lot of enemies.
We got renewed for a third season? Jesus, Dad.
Yeah. It was almost good. I thought it was good from like the pilot almost. But
at 2 a.m., things seem good.
It just does too much. It does too much network bullshit.
I started watching True Blood. The season 5 is out.
Oh, you mean Vampire Sex, the show?
Throw in another cheesy guilty pleasure type show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I tried to get into True Blood. I watched like one season, but it wasn't my thing. I understand it's a higher quality show than
Revenge. I don't know if it's much higher. I mean, maybe production values.
A little bit.
I get to say fuck, but that's about it.
Let's see. I played some more Quantum Conundrum. That shit's tight. It runs brilliantly on my desktop, and it had no excuse for not running great on my laptop the first time I ran it. I don't know if they patched it or something. I recommend it. It's not quite as fucking awesome as Portal, probably yet, maybe ever, but it's very good. I finished my move finally yesterday, so that's off my shoulders. And I basically finished my planned like car mods or whatever. I got my windows tinted. I got my subwoofer installed. I'm in fucking Cargasmville. Like,
what's up with the sub?
I love
Population
my,
you. Special.
It's just a little powered subwoofer. It's an Infinity Bass Link. It's a little 10 inch in a tiny box that has another 10 inch passive radiator on the opposite side. I would love to make a custom stealth fiberglass, like built into the side of the trunk thing that would, if I did it myself, like it'd be, I don't know, a lot of work. And I might poison myself with the resin. I might ruin my car.
But it's
got
to be worth it, right? What's a little poison?
And if I paid somebody to do it, it would be like $500 just for a box, not including
made of paper.
So I was just like, let me just get this thing for $180 on Amazon and then just like pay somebody to put it in. And man, paying like $85 plus a $20 tip to these guys for labor for installing that thing was the best money I've ever spent in my life. Like two guys doing a lot of work
working on your
for like 3 hours.
Yeah.
Like they did not get paid enough, so I tipped them.
There is stuff
And they did such a good job. And one of those and they're like the noobs at the place. They weren't even like the lead installers. Uh-huh. I'm going to
pimp them.
Pimp the place. It's called Car Audio Heaven on El Cajon Boulevard in San Diego.
You'll feel like you're in it.
And it had really good Yelp reviews and I liked everybody there that I had an experience with. And the guy one of the guys who was doing my install had been doing it for 7 years and the job they did is so smooth and brilliant. I can't believe at this point that I was actually worried and considering doing it myself or not wanting someone to fuck up my new car. They did such a good job. It's brilliant.
There are some jobs that it's amazing cost as little as they do. One of them, interestingly, is
especially the hand variety.
The post office, if somebody told you to deliver a letter to the other side of the country and said, I will give you 45 cents to do this with, you'd be like, fuck you, I need $1,800. You know, it's like amazing that it costs that little. And also, I got like this whole thing hung from the roof of my garage, like one of those upper garage storage
things. Sweet.
That and like a bike storage hoist. And they were both
hoist.
Like,
I like that word.
Like the whole thing was like $310. For this whole rack and the hoist and a guy to drive down from Temecula like with all the shit in his truck and install it. And like, that seems so inexpensive for what you get for a guy who does it all the time and does a kick-ass job. Like
in this particular case, like I got a quote for $150 labor somewhere else. I was like, that seems like a lot. I got a quote from this place. It was $85. And I was like, that still seems like a lot. Okay, I'll do it anyway. Mm-hmm. It ended up like my calculations being these guys got paid like $15-ish dollars an hour or less. And they was really skilled and they did such a good job. That seemed like a fucking steal.
Totally.
Sweet. Yeah. So, base up in this. Oh man.
Bass.
So I've been listening to
bass.
You should get one of those like early 90s bass tapes.
I need one.
Just get like now this is what I call music volume 85 or something.
I need to run like PD on my
and just run a 10 hertz
on my laptop and
wave.
Just run a sine wave up and down with it. Yeah, I need to do that. That's one thing on my list. Need to download some old Square Pusher albums. I've been listening to some new albums. I pulled down a couple of Prefuse 73 albums that I hadn't gotten to. I pulled down a couple of Lunas EPs because he's doing an EP shortly with Hudson Mohawk. Their duo is called Tonight with No Vowels and is coming out in like 2 weeks, 1 week, like 10 days. I'm super pumped for that. That shit sounds tight, and I hadn't heard of Lunas before, but his previous EPs are both really cool.
No vowels?
It's Tenugat.
Yeah, didn't we already discuss this?
Yeah, we talked about it on IM.
And you thought it was tight. You thought it was a really good name. It was T-N-G-H-T.
T-N-G-H-T. Okay. Okay.
It looks really good written
down.
Why'd
you say tonight? There's no I sound in it.
Well, I was just saying it's that word minus vowels.
Tonight so with no vowels.
What are you gonna? How are you gonna pronounce that out loud?
How it's spelled? I have no fucking
idea.
It's
tonight.
Okay.
It's tonight with no vowels.
I can't trademark tonight, but they came without the vowels.
Anyway, let's see. Two Lunas albums. Two Prefuse.
I actually thought the music
albums.
Was good, but I didn't like the MC that much. I thought he was only sort of okay. But interestingly, I had like that morning read an article in Wired about that new brand of sort of dark, moody hip hop. Which I think is an interesting trend.
That track you're talking about, I'm not even sure if it's on the Tonight EP or if it's just something else they did. Because they're producers.
Whatever one you linked me, that video.
They're producers, and they work with a bunch of different hip-hop artists. Hudmo did a Kanye song recently. Uh-huh. You know, Twista, like they worked with a bunch of different rappers or whatever. What else? Also, something else. What did I listen to? Shit.
Some more listen
good,
to shit.
Some huh? more good music. Square Pusher, Oofa Bulum. That's good.
Find that in last week's show notes.
Yeah, last week. Anyway.
Check it.
Move on. Main topic.
Chickity, check it.
I haven't found... before I move on. I need the next fucking killer album. None of these albums are just like brilliant. They're all pretty good.
You need the next Ross.
I do. I do. Yeah. I need... I listened to an old, Venetian Snares album.
Yeah.
And I was like, shit, this is amazing. It was a huge chrome cylinder box or unfolding or something like that. That shit sounds so crazy. You know,
like your huge cylindrical boxes too.
I forgot how awesome that album was.
Wait, is that the title of the album?
Yeah.
Something like that. I might have mixed up a word or two. It might just be like cylinder box unfolding or
the Idler wheels.
Huge cylinder huge box.
Cylinder box. So
it was something like that, yeah.
Now see it's a totally different thing because his stuff is all instrumental generally. So instrumental music has always got a wider swath of like what the hell are you going to call this when there's no words, like
noises.
I'm just saying that Fiona Apple, I mean, she has words, so I'm sure she chose that specifically for like the poeticness of it, whereas he chose huge cylindrical unfolding box because it sounds fucking weird, like for the hell of it.
I don't understand why something being instrumental would mean the album title should be longer or shorter.
It tends to be more abstract.
Abstract, yeah.
The title tends to be sounds or noises or like onomatopoeia or something arbitrary.
Like, and I mean, I speak from like experience. Like, I make a lot of instrumental music. I don't have like the chorus to steal the title of the song name. I have to think of something abstract that somehow represents this wordless music, and I'm just saying that like that tends to engender weird, it
feels more arbitrary,
weirder too. And arbitrary and more abstract titles than, you know, music with words. That was my point, sorry.
Yeah,
you know, you get Aphex Twin's album where all the titles were him like mashing the keyboard and whatever letters showed up became the title, like, so that's, you know, Kufnugudjaboda. You know, I mean, Fiona Apple's not going to name her album that. Like, that, she won't even probably think to do something like that because she can read some poetry for her title or something. I don't
know. But, yeah, okay.
They're just different mindsets. I think they're different mindsets.
All right, main topic. Charles, lead us in. Tell us about this article this week.
Read it in its totality.
I'm not going to read it in its totality. I'm going to read a couple paragraphs, which I sort of chose in an arbitrary manner. It was sort of, it was difficult to come up with, you know, two good articles because it's two good articles, two good paragraphs to read here. It's quite a long article. The guy's name is Brendan Sheffield, and the column is called, it's not an article, it's a column called Video Games and Male Gaze, Are We Men or Boys? And that's G-A-Z-E for those who are, there's the problematic double entendre there. So the topic in general is women in games, women in gaming, women in game development, sort of that whole issue, the issue of gender in our hobby. So here's a couple of articles that are sort of just flavor. But she's powerful, she's a strong character argument has been the line of defense for Lara Croft fans for decades, and it's true that recent games have made an effort to decrease her bust size and her overall sexualization in certain ways. But with the new Tomb Raider, the idea of male gaze takes a more complex form. Her grunts and groans throughout the game's ordeals have been dubbed torture porn, and that's certainly one aspect. But then there are the threats of sexual assault, which the team hopes will inspire you to, quote, protect her. As producer Ron Rosenberg told Kotaku, when people play Lara, they don't really project themselves into the character. They're more like, I want to protect her. There's this sort of dynamic of, I'm going to this adventure with her and trying to protect her. Why don't people project themselves onto Lara? Because people means males. Nobody, well, almost nobody, wants to be Lara Croft, not even women, because Lara is very much the subject of male gaze in her games, and who wants to open themselves up to that sort of scrutiny? Getting a bit deeper, while many women do want to be attractive to males, which is part of why... While many women do want to be attracted to males, which is part of why women's magazines often take a male gaze perspective as well, They don't just want to be only that. They don't want to be only that. They don't want to be stared at all the time by everyone. Lara is at no point just a person.
So Charles, just to kind of like back up a bit here, mm-hmm. what is male gaze? What does that mean?
Male gaze is, as I understand it, and I don't have a huge amount of knowledge on the subject, but you know, I did take my requisite women's studies class in college. Male gaze is the idea, comes out of, I think, the 70s era of feminism, kind of pre the gender radical feminism, which is more common today. Essentially, at the time it was originally posited, had mostly to do with film and television, but the idea is that when the producer of the media is male, and particularly when the producer and the consumers are both male, but sort of actually irrespective of who the consumer is, when the producer of the media is male, then the consumer is complicit in the male gaze of the producer. So in the case of film and TV, it's either the cameraman or the director in deciding how to frame a shot, that any shot that involves a woman inherently comes from that perspective, a sort of a sexualized or a perspective where gender,
maybe
objectified, a perspective where gender is apparent and important, and in other words, a gendered perspective, one where the gender of the subject matters, and essentially the issue is that it makes any viewer complicit in that viewpoint of women. And generally has to do with sort of the hyper or over sexualization of women in media.
Yeah, I think the first image of that article was basically the most telling. It's a screenshot of Miranda Lawson from Mass Effect's ass, and yes. That's it. It's just her ass perfectly framed in a screenshot, and I remember
very recognizable.
You're right, and that's what's so awesome and also like. Disturbing / like troubling that we all looked at that screenshot, didn't need a caption, knew exactly what that was, what it was from, what her name was, and why that was the screenshot to start this article, you mm-hmm. know, because it is a recent example of that framing that totally
so about you know, that
doesn't neutralize the gender of the viewer and the
I thought it was interesting subject. That they chose that because I feel that this may be jumping ahead in the discussion a little bit, but I feel like Mass Effect actually treats gender fairly well. You know, FemShep, the female shepherd choice is a completely legitimate one to make. You know, she's just as heroic, you know, not over-sexualized in my view. And Miranda is an interesting character because her character's backstory is one where
I see what you did there.
Yes, this is going to be fraught with double entendre, male gaze.
That
the
was
backstory.
Awesome, though. I love yeah. that.
Her that the character's backstory is one where she was genetically engineered to be sort of this paragon of female sexuality and to be able to have that as a tool by her father, right? Her genetic father, and she expresses throughout the game. Ambivalence and a sense of powerlessness about that. So I think it actually is a fairly complex treatment of that subject. And her overt sexuality has a point beyond simply that. So I thought it was actually kind of a bad example. It was a good example because it got all of us in the frame of mind to then read the rest of that column.
Looking at some ass. Yeah.
Interestingly, Mass Effect, I think, did a pretty good job.
I agree mostly. This is kind of jumping ahead and dismissing the main point of the article, which we'll get to shortly, you know, what good points it makes. But that was my primary problem with it in terms of, you know, it being flawed. The very first picture was that picture, and I don't think there was a single word about Mass Effect in the entire article that I recall. They pulled out example after example of like the most egregious, like sexist games you could think mm-hmm. of that are obvious to agree with. But they didn't bring up Mass Effect or the more nuanced or the successful ones that treat gender roles, more fairly.
Yeah.
And Mass Effect does do a great job for the examples you pointed out and more.
Yeah, so something things that I thought were interesting about that generally is that, I kind of agree with this article. And I tend to get a little queasy when I see portrayals of women in games that are along these lines. You know, female characters are just kind of comically underdressed in many cases. You know, one of the examples they brought up was Terra, but World of Warcraft is guilty of it. Basically, many, many sort of fantasy-oriented, like women involved in blade combat who have, you know, at best, like a chainmail bra, you know, the kind of Princess Leia, like a metal bra and metal panties, but like totally exposed. It's just kind of ridiculous and would never be the garb of someone who is like fighting with edged weapons. And actually the article, it's the column called out a pretty cool Tumblr, which I checked out, which is Women in Reasonable Armor. Mm-hmm. Which is, it's pretty funny. It's you just go to it and it's pictures of women, like, you know, fantasy artwork, but they're all wearing like actual armor that you could really fight in. And I thought that was good. It's pretty good.
It's telling that a website like that would even be created, you know, which is obviously in response to this dilemma that he's bringing up.
Yeah.
You know,
It's called Women Fighters in Reasonable Armor .tumblr.com.
Yeah. And on that note, another example he brings up is this recent Hitman Absolution trailer.
Yes.
Which features like 7 or 8 women in sort of a, like, nun dominatrix.
They're dressed as nuns.
Well, they're dressed as nuns, but then at some point they take off, like, their, you know, the part that covers most of them, and they're wearing, like, well, not the habit, because that's, like, head.
The robe or whatever,
and they're basically wearing, like, tight leather, you know, shorts and boots.
Dominatrix outfits.
Yeah, dominatrix outfits, and he says here, I got the article, you know, if you were going to assassinate someone, would you wear the tightest thing possible? Would you expose your breasts to the world, essentially creating a target for a bullet? Probably not. And, you know, his indirect point is that they are dressed that way specifically for the male gaze. You know, like, you know... guys like TNA, and that is exciting, and that's something you want to see, and so they're giving it to you. You know, they're just responding to a market that is proven time and time again to work and get interest and sell stuff. And so it's, you know, and once again, maybe I'm getting ahead that, you know.
No, that's a key part of the problem.
Yeah, it's not a video game problem. This is not a video game discussion, really. This is a society discussion.
Well, I think it is
an advertising discussion. Or marketing.
So sex sells, that's certainly true, but the issue is that video games, unlike, for example, film or advertising, you know, broader advertising, you know, film has a fairly, you know, robust roster of female directors, female screenwriters, etc. And I think I believe that industry kind of feels like they have largely addressed this issue. And that is not true in games, right? The vast majority of developers are male.
Yes, if the article said, here are some statistics about the percentage of games that that were directed by, written by, et cetera, worked on with high positions of female leads. Or if it said, you know, this is the percentage of games that that actually treat gender roles fairly, like, the percentages are going to look a lot worse than other industries. It's bad for games right now. Yeah, and I agree with that main, like, point that it's kind of getting at. Games are worse. One of the questions is why. I think probably, like, the gaming industry is a less mature industry.
Yeah.
It has something to do with it. It's, like, been around fewer years. It's also tends to be a younger industry to some extent. I mean, it's not all 12-year-olds, but I
think the average gamer is now, like, 30 or something. Yeah, so it's not really
that's
a
true,
young crowd
anymore.
But
this is the first generation where that's been true.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's getting older and older as we age, as this generation of gamers, us, essentially,
and
ages into that.
And compared to the average viewer of TV or something, you know, that watch it, like, the average Law and Order viewer is like 55 or something. you know, it's still younger on average. So maybe that has to, those things have to do with it. It is a problem. But I don't like the way, like, I don't agree with all the points he brings up. I don't like the way he makes these absolute statements. Like, even your quotes about Tomb Raider, like, no one would want to, that no one puts themselves in her character, or no one would want to open themselves up to, like, body criticism or whatever. Like, those are not absolute truths. Like, I role play female characters all the time, you know, in all kinds of games, and not just because I want the character to look hot and I want to look at her butt while I play or whatever. I mean, in Skyrim, I made this this like raggedy old witch woman, and I couldn't successfully role play that character very well because I didn't think the storytelling in Skyrim was very good. But in Mass Effect, I played Femme Shep all the way through, and she was super badass. She was, you know, awesomer than Jack Bauer, basically. You know, so I have played like all the Tomb Raiders, and do feel like I'm in her character, and I do. It definitely has a male gaze problem, you know, with its cinematography, with it, her, you know, egregious body proportions, etc. And then the newest one, I haven't seen all the trailers because I'm avoiding the spoilers. I'm just going to play the game. But it sounds pretty bad from all the quote torture porn accusations or whatever. But I hesitate, you know, even to accept those criticisms at face value, because I think, like, you know, making that leap from, oh, you know, Laura is in this situation where she's, I don't know, injured and crawling, and, you know, the Uncharted guy, what's his name?
Nathan Drake.
If Nathan Drake were, you know, in the equivalent situation, I didn't see the video. I'm just saying theoretically.
Yeah.
If those two went through the exact same situation, wearing the exact same type of like clothes and being equally haggard and making the same kind of grunts and stuff, you know, she might get accusations of it being torture porn, while he, you know, would seem perfectly normal.
Yeah.
Right? So I do think it's maybe going too far to make those leaps for Laura Croft. But the other examples, like the Hitman, those are obviously, like, just terrible.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the problem, is that that is the problem with the male gaze, and it's sort of this, its strength and its weakness as a construct, is that, you know, if a whole, its strength is like, the point is, like, if the whole industry, right, the whole culture of developers and games basically only comes from one perspective, from the male perspective, it's really not feasible to simply say to women who want to play a game that doesn't objectify their gender, well, if you don't like it, don't play it, right? Because almost all games come from that perspective and have that problem, unless you're going to talk about like Mario and games that are pitched toward children, right? Or that's not to say that those games don't have something to give to an adult player, but, you know, if we're talking about mature games, the issue is that, you know, the M for mature rating as a whole really doesn't mean mature, like, in any sort of broad sense. It means there are guns and blood and boobs in this game. It doesn't mean we handle topics in a mature way, or, you know, there is a mature handling. There are a very few games that do approach, you know, some interesting and mature topics. There's a game coming out that's called, I believe it's called Papa Iyo. Have you guys heard of that game?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a game where you play a little boy who has like an imaginary friend who is like this monster, and he eats frogs. He loves to eat these frogs that you find throughout the world. Naturally. But the problem is, when he eats too many of these frogs, he gets angry and he actually starts attacking you, the player character, the little kid. But you sort of need him. You need that that monster to progress through the game. And it's an allegory for the developer's alcoholic father, right? So that's a mature handling of that topic. That's a mature and an interesting topic that, you know, somebody's really trying to say something with that. That is not what an M-rated game means. And I doubt that that game will get an M because it looks cutesy and cartoonish, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, that's a problem. I just feel like, ultimately, if your choice is between the two extremes, the one extreme being the total feminist, you know, no game that in any way objectifies a woman should be allowed on the market, and the other option being essentially where we're at now, which is, you know, the vast majority of games are made by men and they're made by publishers who, or they're sold by publishers who want them to sell well, and they have this defined market, and you know, it requires, you know, TNA to do, or that's what they're comfortable with. I'm going to choose that one. I'm going to choose the option where at least both can exist.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because I do think that sex and sexuality has a place, and I kind of, like you, Josh, I shy away from wanting to completely, you know, get rid of any treatment of those topics, because I think it's important that we're able to do so.
Yeah. I'm with you. Like, you know, it's, you know, kind of Candide-ish, you know, no matter how bad it is, we still live in the best of all possible worlds because of this freedom. You know, it's more a reflection of the society. It's not that they're necessarily directing it. I mean, the fact that, you know, there is a market, people like staring at boobs and ass, and they products will be made that harness that, and they will be sold, and this is a cycle. And it takes people to make games like that, or make Portal, for instance, that has a female character who's not sexualized, and really her gender is well, I don't want to say it's immaterial, and I don't want to say too much, because that
Portal
kinda,
1, it's probably immaterial.
It's kind of, yeah, Portal 2, it's less immaterial. It actually does have some you know,
it bearing. Matters, but it doesn't have...
Yeah, I mean, it didn't have to, though, and it doesn't need to be an awesome game. They could have taken out that part of it, and it still would have been good. But, you know, there's more to the story than just, like, these games that are being made. I feel like it's also, you know, at least partly just a mindset. Like, another example, I don't know if you brought it up in this article, but I remember reading recently where this woman who's actually a game journalist, I think, went to E3 and multiple times was trying to get in to play games. And she would start playing a game, and like the guy that was working the booth would like come over and, you know, say like, oh, do you need help with that? Or may even like wrench the keyboard or the controller out of her hands or take over, because she wasn't moving forward. She wasn't like, you know, actively engaging the game. She was actually just sort of like I do with Fez. Like, you get to a level, you put the controller down, you kind of like sit there in awe of this awesome creation that you're looking at. And he interpreted that as like, oh, you don't know what you're doing, or you're not mature or intelligent enough to understand games, because, you know, with the subtext, you're a girl. That's haha, obviously, you know. And this happened multiple times, and she's like, you know, I'm a flipping game journalist. Like, I know how to play games, you know. You know, I instinctively did WASDA when I came up to the keyboard, but that guy and apparently other guys, you know, just they immediately jumped to this conclusion. They have this deep-seated mindset that more often than not, a girl is not going to understand what's going on, is not going to be good, and wants pink ponies. And anybody who's not like that is some weird aberration still, even at E3, which is like...
Well, E3 is one of the worst offenders,
why would you even be there?
Like, the booth babe problem at E3 is one that gets articles every year.
Right.
Like, this is ostensibly supposed to be a gathering of... I mean, it literally is. It's not ostensibly. It is a... You have to be in the industry to get in, right? Aside from... But aside from, like, you know, people who hand their tickets off to friends or whatever.
Or you just know someone who's in the industry.
Right, yeah.
So.
But everyone who's there is supposed to be a member of the industry in some degree, and yet there are still these booth babes every year that are out there in skimpy clothing, you know, demoing, you know, to try and get people to come over. So there was another example in that in the column where it was also at E3. This woman was, I think she's actually the developer of N+, worked on that team and was introduced as someone who worked on N Plus to like a publisher rep, and who said, "Oh, cool! Like in PR, right?"
Right.
And it's another one of those things. And I think a problem with that is like statistical reality versus perception. The assumption that, you know, it could, on the one hand, that guy's assumption, you could read that as he just assumes that, oh, she's a girl, so she couldn't, she's a woman, right? My own, you know, inherent gender bias there. She's a woman, so she'd be unable to, you know, have done any, quote, real work on this game. That could be what is underlying that, you know, that what he said.
Or he's just playing statistics.
Or it's the statistical reality that it's far less likely to, for that a woman, you know, they are much more likely to fill marketing and PR roles at game development studios, and that's just what he's used to dealing with. And that's what's common.
I think it's a very similar issue to homosexuality and its treatment. I mean, it's also a problem in games. How many games can you think of with mature treatments of homosexuality compared to movies and stuff? Many fewer. And also there's the take offense versus honest statistical mistake situation, right, with assuming everyone is a straight male, you know, assuming everyone on the internet is a male, or just, you know, meeting someone and assuming that they're straight. Right. It's definitely an every sided problem. You know, more people need to come out of the closet, you know. More women gamers need to be really vocal, you know, to help the cause of making people aware,
yeah,
that they're not like this anomaly. They are a large market, you know. Anderson Cooper just came out this week, which I think is outstanding, because I think he's really well respected by all these old people, to be blunt, right? Mm-hmm. And I just, as soon as I saw that, I just imagined in my head, you know, not what's the aghast, right phrase, not aghast, people rolling in their graves, yes, but
yeah, jaws on the floor, yeah, of nursing homes across the country,
yeah, whereas, yeah, to a lot of us it's pretty obvious probably,
right?
Or a complete non-issue to,
yeah,
me.
Or a non-issue,
yeah.
But I just couldn't. I couldn't help but get a smile on my face, like thinking of all these people whose, yeah, world is going to be overturned by that. Wait, I got all this news from this guy,
and he's gay, so it's all invalid.
So somehow, yeah, that makes any difference at all.
Yeah. Right. So is it possible that, like, this issue, you know, that keeps coming up in games is it's just because it's young and it's sort of in its prepubescent phase, and in 50 years we won't really be having this conversation anymore?
That is the hope, right? That is definitely the hope. I mean, and the question is how to solve the problem if it's fundamentally market driven. Like, I, yeah, think, well, my, that's the kind of root issue.
My,
it's
answer kind of
a, is it a chicken and egg thing?
It's like,
right,
a horrible cycle. Like, if they, yeah, keep creating the industry, it will never die.
If there's a market, then they make these games, and there need to be more women to make their kind of games.
Right.
But, you know,
but they're marginalized, we'll, and never, so they don't want to, yeah, actually make games because they feel, yeah, objectified and excluded. Yeah. So why would they?
My answer is vote with your dollars. Don't buy Hitman. Buy, yeah, more Mass Effects.
Yeah.
Don't, you buy, know, none Dominatrix.
Right. I'm,
I think,
not,
they already do.
I'm
that,
not
though,
sure whether or not you should buy the next Tomb Raider.
That's part,
honestly,
of the chicken and egg thing.
That's a tough one.
I think women already do that. I think they don't buy those kind of the games that they feel,
but
are
dudes
ridiculous.
Do.
Right. And so that's the chicken and egg problem. They already aren't, I think, but there still aren't games that are coming,
yeah,
in, right?
Well, yeah, the other problem is get more women into the video, yes, game industry.
Yeah.
You know, maybe promote more female college scholarships for programming and art and blah, blah, blah. But also reduce, or, you know, make better hiring practices.
Yeah.
How do we do that? I mean,
affirmative action. I mean, that's a whole can of worms, yeah, in and of itself.
Well, because, and I'm assuming that, like, the movie and the TV and even the writing in industry ecosystems, at some point in their nascency, were sort of like this. They were dominated by dudes. It was a dude thing and more women got into it and somehow it leveled out. And so no one's writing articles about how women are constantly being objectified in, you know, the top 10 bestsellers, you know, every time, you know, eventually.
I think that's right. I think it takes a lot of time. And I hope that it happens more quickly, but I think that it does require having discussions like this. I wanted to say, actually mention that the comment thread on Gama Sutra on this particular column was incredibly, incredibly well-behaved, like not the kind of thing you expect to see. I think a lot of that has to do with the type of audience who read Gama Sutra. It's a lot of game developers, just generally a measured, a site where measured discourse is valued.
But it could be comment curating too. I don't know.
I think that might be part of it. I think they might just have really good moderators. Freaking
comment Gestapo is what you're saying.
Usually that stuff makes columns like that will make it out to the wider internet and we'll get a flood of trolls and just like.
So if this were on Reddit, this would be a completely different discussion, is what you're saying.
Yeah. But Reddit has innate comment curation too via the voting system.
That's true. Yeah.
It's just a different type.
But it's a little more prone still to the cheap laugh memification internet culture.
I think a lot of that response is men who the sort of men's rights advocacy MRA, men sort of feel. This happens also within the like affirmative action type debates as well. Men, particularly white men, feel like they. Like, I never did anything. I never owned slaves and neither did my grandparents. So, you know, that discussion has nothing to do with me and racism is not something I need to think about. And I kind of feel the same way with this. Like, I like the games that I like. I don't want to feel guilty or ashamed for these things. And, you know, I don't know.
And you don't want to feel like you're perpetuating it.
Yeah.
Just because you bought Hitman Absolution. Right. Now you're part of the problem instead of the solution, right?
Right.
Yeah, I mean
if you like that game for other reasons?
Right? Yeah, because that game has a lot to like.
Is it fundamentally bad? And I think this guy is not saying it that you liked that trailer because you like TNA. Like that's not a fundamentally wrong thing.
Sure, yeah.
That you enjoy the sight of that, but and this is kind of the catch-22. It's like okay, I like tits and ass, but I'm also sort of, kind of, in some small part, indirectly perpetuating this industry, which kind of treats women as like slabs of meat. So that's my dilemma. Like, okay, yeah. Well, I can't give in to my baser urges ever because that's, you know, like taking down like finer society.
Yeah. So I actually had a professor who told me something powerful on that topic once. And he said, what about... So I had actually, when I was writing for the Daily Aztec, actually before I was a writer, I wrote an article that was sort of along those lines, the kind of white male, like, I don't deserve this kind of treatment, you know, I've never been responsible for any of this ill treatment, you know. The kind of counter arguments to that are like, yeah, you personally haven't, but the whole system is set up to favor you, right? And acknowledging that is, you know, tough to do. But, so this professor told me, you know, what about the idea of responsibility without culpability? And that has always stuck with me for a long time. It was one of those kind of light bulb moments in my education. This is why college is valuable. It teaches you how to think, right? Like it cannot be your fault and you can still have some responsibility and, you know, take it upon yourself to change something that you see as a problem, even if it wasn't your fault, you know?
Yeah, and I think you could buy and enjoy Hitman Absolution and still treat women decently. Like,
yeah, you absolutely
they're not exclusive, yeah. You know, exclusive or
yeah, and yeah. And Hitman Absolution, a game like that that has very stylish violence, and you know, there are any number of films like that. You know, Quentin Tarantino movies,
right.
Come to
grindcore
mind.
Stuff
that are, you know, some would say exquisite filmmaking that. Also involve, you know, lots and lots of stereotypes and lots of ill treatment of any number of different groups, you know, minority or not.
Yeah, it's because it's weird because like the connection between the product, this thing that ostensibly objectifies women, and the consumer, the person buying it, there's really no way to get the point around that you bought that and you bought it. You gave money, it sold. That means it's marketable and profitable. And at the same time, say to the maker, hey, I like this, but I also think women are cool.
Yeah.
You know, all they know is that they made this product that yeah. shows a bunch of boobs and you gave them money for it. And that's it. They look at a number. You're a small statistic. You made up the 5 million people that bought the boob and ass movie. Yeah. So they're going to make more boob and ass movies because you bought it.
89 on Metacritic, yo.
You know, and
we're going to make Hitman 12. Yeah, you know, I think the difference is that, like, in a game or in an industry...
I think this is the most boob and ass in a podcast in our podcast yet.
You clearly don't listen to Boob and Ass Quarterly like I do.
Quarterly?
Yeah.
Daily, man.
It's a financial... yeah, it's like the Financial Times. Anyway, in an industry like film, there are many voices, right? And there are voices of women filmmakers and, you know, genres that are much more appreciated by women, like, you know, whatever, romantic comedies or
that was pretty stereotypical of you.
Again, playing the statistics, more appreciated by women, right. Less than by men. You know, it has room, and it's a more mature in terms of age. It's an older industry, right? So hopefully that's what... Do we think that's basically what we have? We just have to wait it out?
I think that solves most things. Just wait it out.
I think the answer is even harder than the homosexuality issue. Because the homosexuality is like, just wait a generation.
Right.
All those anti-gay people will die.
Right.
Or are the majority.
It will seem bizarre.
You know? And yeah. Then it's obviously shifting. Games and sexism, I'm not sure we're even in the right direction. Mm-hmm. Are we making progress? Or is it in a... like a status quo, indefinite perpetuation like situation. I don't know.
I think the recent like kind of explosion of indie development is really helpful because
true.
They're not a part of a publisher who lives and dies by that major demographic statistic, you know, like quarterly report kind of thing. You know, they're making stuff with, you know, I want to make a game that's awesome that says something.
All right. We haven't talked about it yet. Social gaming. Farmville,
yeah,
iPhone gaming, you know, Angry Birds,
the Wii,
all Wii gaming, Wii Sports and shit like that. All these things are probably, you know, bringing a lot more women gamers in, having a lot fewer, you know, egregiously sexist examples of successful games, etc. So in that sense, you know. That's headed in the right direction. Maybe the markets just need to merge more and influence each other more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. We solved it.
Sweet. That's an interesting issue because, like, at least at the moment,
there are a lot of
games like those types of games that you mentioned that don't have these same issues, or certainly not to the extent that they exist in AAA games. But that's also kind of not a good answer. Just saying, like, we'll just go play these other not AAA games that don't have big budgets and great production value.
Right? Yeah, but I'm saying, yeah, their influence, they need to influence the AAA games.
And cause the
AAA
whole overtime,
industry
yeah.
needs to take lessons from the popularity of the iPhone indie, games and yeah. social games. And their
developers,
audiences need to commingle more and, you know.
Indie developers are the AAA developers of the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's generally hopeful.
Period.
All right.
Sexism's bad.
That was the Escort Mission Podcast. Thanks for listening. That was long. Good week. Go to Amazon.com, or sorry, go to theescortmission.com and click on our Amazon link. Buy your Infinity Base link, because I got one and it's fucking tight.
Brace.
Buy the Lunas albums on Amazon MP3.
Buy Vir Heroicus. Good stuff.
Yeah, that...
I know that guy.
That book that Charles talked about.
Yes. I forgot the title. Oh, yeah, Rasputin's Bastards.
Send us some fucking questions. Emails, what's your opinion on what we said, so that we can do an email bag section.
Seriously. Which is at mail.
Don't you
want to
hear that jingle, that sweet, sweet jingle?
Mail. Oh, man, we haven't heard that jingle again. Yeah.
Mailbag. Don't
do it. Oh,
you teased it. That was a taste.
Oh, if you want the next three, four or five notes, then you got to send us an email at mail@theescortmission.com.
There you go. All right. See you later.
You just got escorted.
Out.